All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell. Today, I am joined by Robbie Falk. Robbie, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Trying to decompress a little bit. No more sports for a few months. I'm sure you can empathize with that a little bit. So I'm trying to take it a little bit easy. We got transfer portal talk to heat up everything, but at least we don't have to cover a lot of games.
Yeah. And then anyway, you can find Robbie on Twitter at Robbie Falk on 3. Yeah, so you know, I think people were probably hoping that this would be more of a regional recap slash super regional preview. Unfortunately, it is a sort of a postmortem episode instead. After state baseball gets eliminated in the regional, you were there. How was that?
It was about like every other Mississippi State series and stretch this year in baseball. A lot of ups and downs. The first game against St. John's, State pitched it really well. It was one of those classic 2024 Mississippi State baseball games, in that they pitched it really well, defended it well, and they couldn't come through offensively. And then there, in the extra innings, they were able to hit the 3-run home run. I mean, it just kind of followed the string of wins that Mississippi State's had this year, where they've had that one big inning offensively, and then had pitched it really well throughout the game. And the two losses against Virginia, it mirrored the losses that Mississippi State's had this year, where they've made mistakes on the bases, they've made mistakes in the field, and it's led to kind of second guessing after games. What if they would have done this? What if they would have done that? And they just weren't able to do enough. I mean, both the wins and the losses have been kind of head scratchers for me this year for Mississippi State. They showed so much potential throughout the year, but they never could fully climb over that hill. They did just enough to kind of stay in the fight, but they never could really get over the hump and do the things that they should have been able to do. So it was interesting. I think the best team won. I think Virginia was the best team in the regional and one of the better teams in the country because of what they do at the plate. That's just, and then defensively, they made the plays. They pitched it extremely well, I thought, too. And it was just kind of Mississippi State not really taking care of its business and Virginia going out and taking those ball games.
Yeah, it sort of seemed like a lot of this is just sort of, I guess, pretty much just like what you had seen from state all year. I was reading through kind of your story on, you know, sort of the, I guess maybe like the legacy of the season is maybe the way I'm trying to phrase it. But you mentioned that they lost 13 games by one run.
Yeah. And it could have been 14 had they not blown up in the ninth inning the other day against Virginia. It was a one run game going into the ninth. That was that was kind of the whole complex of the season, is this team just really struggled in those close ball games.
Yeah. So I mean, just how different is this season if, you know, half of those games go the other way? I mean, you're probably not even looking at a team that had to go on the road for a regional.
Oh, no doubt. They finished the year 7-13 in one run games. And I mean, if you make that thing, 10 and whatever, you get three more wins, you're probably hosting a regional. And you might even be in position to be a national seed at that point. You take away half of the losses that they had this year by, two or three runs or less, and this team is a national seed and probably a top five team in the country. That's the difference between this team being really, really good and potentially in Omaha in a couple of weeks, and this team being on, two seed and on the outside looking in. That's how slim the margin was for them this year. But I think at the end of the day, it all kind of evened out with them, and they kind of were what they were. They were a team that just could not find a way to win enough of those games and to do enough of the things right that gave them those wins.
Yeah, and I'll throw this in there too, that it always seems like game two is always the important one to win, right? You know, winning the first one is nice, but it's such a game changer if you can win the second one. And so having another one run loss in the regional is also just, a huge changer for that.
Yeah, no doubt. That second game is so big because it puts you in position where you have to be beaten twice. And the team that is in that loser's bracket, they're playing a game before they play you again to just get out of it. It's just the regional format is so difficult because if you lose a game in those first two games, you're essentially having to play three games to get back into the position to win the regional. So it's very difficult to do, and Virginia was set up well. They have the offense that they could definitely keep up with opposing teams, and State just did not have that. I thought State pitched it incredibly well for the first 8 1/3 innings against Virginia to have a chance to even win that game and get to a winner's bracket final. But it just the offense just did not come through for them when they needed it.
Yeah, before we get too into the baseball talk, it looks like you had a decent time in Charlottesville there.
It was a good trip, man. It's a really historic place. I mean, obviously, probably a couple hours away from Washington, D.C. So there's a lot of history up there. And I thought that, the whole situation there with Thomas Jefferson and his, obviously, the ties to the university there where he basically founded it and designed a lot of the stuff on the grounds there. We were able to see that. We were able to see Monticello. It was a really, really cool trip. The weather was fantastic. The people were really nice. And the stadium was cool too. So yeah, we had a good time.
I always kind of love a little travel for work, right?
Yes. If you're going on the road, you always have to go see the sights. And we even got into the football stadium and got to see that a little bit. And it's always cool to be able to, see what another place has that if you haven't seen it before. And being in the SEC, you see a lot of these schools around here. Being able to go somewhere else that you don't see very often was pretty cool.
Yeah, so I sort of feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like fans this year either wanted, State to go back to their old ways, right? Win 50 games, host a super regional, right? Or be bad enough to make some changes. And I feel like while this year was an improvement, you sort of accomplished neither of those.
Yeah, it was kind of the in between. Like it was what people didn't really want. Like just getting to the NCAA tournament, being a two seed, doing just enough to get in there. That was kind of the frustrating part because people at some point were kind of like, either get back to competing for Omaha or let's move on. And I think it was kind of complex. It was, just a really good step forward for Mississippi State because they fixed all their pitching issues, and now you have a pitching coach that you feel like can sell Mississippi State and sell his job to the transfer portal. I think that's going to be huge for them in the offseason. But at the same time, some of these same issues that you're still having are obviously present there. And it creates more conversation going in the next year of, what is this program? Where do you go beyond this if this team isn't showing improvement next year as well?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it was a return to form kind of. I believe in D1 baseball's last ranking, State was 15th. That's nothing to sneeze at. This is their best season since 21, obviously. But at the same time, it's, always having a super regional at the Dude is always going to be the like bare minimum of a, successful season, right? And certainly folks aren't going to be happy about not making it out of a regional. But I think also where things get complicated is you have a lot of talent most likely going to leave this year through the draft alone. I was looking through MLB.com's like top 200. You got Dakota Jordan obviously at 29th, Durangelo at 31st, Cal Stephen 87th, and Nate Doan at 164th. So maybe, a couple of those guys at the end there, maybe they come back. But I mean, and there could be more guys too. But when you look at the talent, it's going to be hard to swallow, at least.
Yeah, it is I think a massive offseason for Chris Simonis, and it was last year too. And the biggest acquisition he made in the offseason last year was Justin Parker, being able to get that guy running your pitching staff after you've been struggling the way that you have. So, that was huge for him. And I mean, as far as the portal is concerned, you basically got Cal Stephen was a huge pickup for them. And then you got two catchers that kind of kept you afloat, but they weren't total difference makers. So, I mean, the portal haul last year wasn't just immaculate for him, but they kind of pieced it together. This year he needs to get some difference makers because, just like you mentioned, they're going to lose some major pieces. Cal Stephens gone, Durangelo Sanger's gone, Dakota Jordan's gone, probably David Mershon, maybe Hunter Hines. You're losing a ton of guys. You got to go out and get difference makers both on the mound and at the plate. And that's kind of the challenge for him. I think they've hit it pretty hard in the first couple of weeks here. But you still got to go out and get those players. They weren't able to get Paul Skenes a couple years ago. They weren't able to get Braden Montgomery and Luke Holman last year. So they've got to get guys like that this year and make sure that they have people that are able to supplement their losses because it is going to be a big rebuilding job.
Though I will say that one of the thoughts I've had though is, could this actually be a good thing moving forward? Because, if you're seeing guys not only come in and improve a lot, but also improve their draft stock big time. I mean, we're not talking about Durangelo as a serious MLB prospect this time last year, right?
No, it was all potential with him. And I think Justin Parker is a big reason for, him rising to where he was.
So, like, how big of a pull could that be for, both the transfer portal and upcoming recruiting classes that, hey, we can still put guys into the MLB from here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. Like I said, Durangelo was kind of a novelty guy. It was cool that he could throw with both arms. But now it looks like he's going to be, straight right-handed pitcher on the next level. And he's still a prospect that is just, he's got a rocket ship on his back right now. And I think that Justin Parker's a big reason for that. He's kind of honed in on that right arm, and he was really good this year. There were only a couple of outings I thought that he kind of struggled. And same for Cal Stephen. That guy went from giving up 10 runs against Ole Miss at Purdue last year to going 8 innings and shutting out Ole Miss this year, and was first team All SEC. He made such a huge jump under Parker. You look at some of the other guys too. I mean, Tyson Hardin, Tyler Davis went from having an 8 earned run average down to a 2 something. He had like a 1.27, I think, going into that ninth inning the other day against Virginia. And I know he struggled there, but he was good all year long. Justin Parker is a big reason for all of that. I think that's going to be a huge sell this year in the offseason for Mississippi State to have a pitching coach like that can go out there and tell guys, hey, look what I did in 1 year. I took Mississippi State from a 7 earned run average down to a 4.15. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly. And though I do wonder if that kind of success makes it hard to try to hold on to him too.
Yeah, the one thing the state has going in their favor, I think he's paid well. I think they're going to be able to give him what he wants, and that's one thing that they had to do with him is give him a good salary because you did have a coach that was on the hot seat in Chris Simonis, and sometimes that's really hard to sell to other assistant coaches that this could be a 1 year deal. We don't know, but they Chris Simonis really sold it well, and they had a plan presented to Mississippi State that they were going to put into place to get Mississippi State back on track. And Justin Parker trusted in it, and I think that the relationship that they've built, and him having full autonomy of the pitching staff and things like that, and everything that he has at his disposal from a resources standpoint at Mississippi State, that's a big selling point for him. I'm sure that if a big time job opens up, that his name will come up for it, and I imagine at some point he's going to be up for head coaching positions, but I do think Mississippi State's in a good spot to keep him.
Sort of speaking of staffing, how do you feel about Chris Lemonis long term now?
I think next year's going to tell the story. I don't think he can go out there and have another 9-win SEC season like he did the last 2 years before this season. I think that would be problematic for him keeping his job, just because that's 3 in 4 years. If he's showing some progress, and this could be a pretty big rebuilding job with what he's losing, but next year if they're back in the NCAA tournament, I just don't foresee Mississippi State making a move at that point. I think with what they're losing, and the task he has ahead of him, and listen, I mean that's just as much his fault as anybody's that they're in this position, but he has presented a plan to Zach Selman that he's going to get them back on track. He's got to continue to have Mississippi State's head above water here and be able to build in these recruiting classes and what he's got coming up on the roster. So I think it's something to watch for sure. I don't think that he can go out there and just have a really rough season and Mississippi State move forward with it.
Yeah, and on the one hand, I sort of feel like trying to evaluate a guy solely on their postseason is really difficult, just because baseball is such a crazy random sport, and we've seen some good teams this year, like East Carolina, Oklahoma State, not even make it out of their region, right? Like that does happen. But I mean, just in general, like, how do you feel about a short postseason for State this year?
It was a good season for Mississippi State. It's going to be tough moving forward. There's a lot that has to happen for them, but I thought they made a big step this year, and Chris Simonis showed that he can piece some things together. He can fix a lot of their issues. I thought he did that. There's still so much more that they have to fix. There's some things that they don't do well that has kind of transcended the last 3 years for them. And that's something that they've got to do moving forward. They got to fix those issues that they have. We'll see if they're able to do that. But I'll give Chris Simonis the benefit of the doubt. He went out there and finished, and he fixed the pitching situation. Now he needs to fix some of their offensive issues and their deficiencies they have there, and then defensively as well. And we'll see what happens next year for him.
Yeah, and then I have to say, though, when it comes to the regional, I got to shout out Dakota Jordan for his performance last week. If I'm doing my math right, 5 hits in the second game against St. John's was a season high for him. 10 hits overall, 9 RBIs, 3 home runs, for a state team that had struggled at times offensively. He certainly left it all on the field if this is indeed his last game for state.
Yeah, for sure. You got a couple of guys that are those draft eligible sophomores, which is becoming kind of the theme, I think. A lot of guys are getting held back, and they're a little older when they come in. And Gerangelo Sanja, Dakota Jordan, David Mershon, all three of those guys, played their hearts out. And I thought that it was a good run for them, but it feels like they're probably going to lose all three. And Gerangelo and Dakota especially both came out and mentioned on Tuesday, I guess, that they, thank you, Stark Vegas, whatever it sounds like, is probably it for them. But it was a good run for them.
Yeah, I sort of want to say it is a little unlucky for, a couple of your better players being draft eligible sophomores. But I mean, you know that coming in, right? So it's hard to
Yeah.
be like too sympathetic, but it does kind of stink.
It does. I was talking about that the other day, and part of that is roster management for Chris Simonis. I mean, you got to have people in position, but it is kind of bad luck that potentially three of your best players are all leaving at the same time because they're draft eligible sophomores. That's kind of the tough luck of it all. But you got to have people in place that can step in and do what they're doing. And we'll see if Mississippi State can find guys to do that. It's going to be tough. You got shortstop, which is a huge part of the defense, but also the guy that's playing it is kind of your heartbeat there in David Mershon, and a guy that really kind of starts things for you there towards the top of the order. Then you have one of your best starters on the mound in Jerangelo, and then your top power hitter and best hitter in Dakota Jordan. It's rough. But that's what the transfer portal is for. Mississippi State's got to go out there and find some people that can really do it.
Yeah, anyway, so like now what first date, right? Like what is the priority for you?
Well, I asked Chris Simonis about that at the press conference the other day, and obviously offensive depth is their biggest priority, is finding building an offense that is going to be able to hit top to bottom, but also if you need somebody to come in there against left-handed pitching, or you need somebody to step in as a DH, you have somebody there. That's going to be their biggest priority, is building depth on the offensive side of the ball. And then obviously you want to build depth on the mound too, and get some frontline starters there, get some defensive guys. That's kind of the challenge during this thing. There's a lot of guys they got to go out there and get out of the portal. So, and then you'll have some guys in the signing class that you hope can come in right away and play for you. So that's kind of what they're looking at this offseason.
Sorry, I just remember the thing that I wanted to mention. I do think it's interesting with the draft eligible sophomores with sort of leverage in the way negotiations can go, because I feel like one of the reasons why a lot of juniors sign is, once you go back for your senior year, you have no leverage, right? Your deal is just not going to be anywhere as good. So I didn't know if that extra year it could be helpful.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely like a pitch that they'll make. I think that was something that they used with Jake Mangum. Now, Jake Mangum was a little bit different situation. He was a guy that loved Mississippi State. I'm not saying these guys don't, but Jake was more interested in winning games for Mississippi State than going pro right away. I mean, the money was never an issue for him. It never really was about money for him. And that's why he stayed all 4 years, and I think he signed for like $25,000 or something with the Mets. So it's a little bit different with him, but it was definitely a pitch that Mississippi State was able to use with him to come back for another year, because he had that leverage as a junior. That's something that they will also use with these guys too, is we can give you some NIL money that's probably going to be able to surpass what you'll make in the signing bonus. Maybe not for Dakota Jordan or Jerangelo, but for David Mershon, I definitely think that you could pitch that to him, because I think he's somewhere around fourth or fifth round, maybe, in some projections. I don't think he's a first round pick. He's probably middle rounds in the top 10 rounds. So that's something that they can use with him. They could give him NIL money that would match or surpass what he can make in the signing bonus. And then on top of that, next year you still have leverage. So I think that's definitely, I mean, it plays into the players, side of things, because they can use leverage on both sides as sophomores. But I really think that you're probably going to lose Jerangelo and Dakota, and then we'll see on David Mershon.
Yeah, no, I sort of figure with how highly they're ranked, it's probably not going to get too much better for them. But certainly, the more you go down the line, the better the odds are. Yeah, what were your maybe a couple of your favorite moments this season?
I thought towards the end of the season, definitely the Dakota Jordan and Hunter Hines kind of coming out of their funk was really cool, and seeing that. Brooks Auger throwing 8 innings and only having 12 balls thrown the entire game was nuts. Struck out 13 against Ole Miss. That was crazy in the SEC tournament. A couple of walk-offs were fun. It was really fun watching David Mershon play this year. He was just dirtbag type player, one of those guys that you wish you had 10 or 12 players just like him, because what he did on defense and at the plate and everything, just a fun kid to watch. And then seeing, Cal Steven come into his own this year, and also Durangelo, both of those guys doing what they did, one and two on the staff, was really cool. It was great for the entire pitching staff to make the jump that they did this year.
Yeah, and then just kind of one of the last notes I want to hit on was that what do you think you'll remember this team for?
It's very complicated, man, because the first thing that comes to mind is that they just didn't do enough. It's a team that I'm always going to wonder, what if they would have just won a few of these games? There were several games, especially in SEC play, when you look back at the Florida series, that they could have swept. They could have swept the Georgia series. They could have won the Ole Miss series. They could have swept the Missouri series. There's like five or six SEC games that they should have won that they didn't. And that's going to stick with me more, I think, more than anything. And it's a shame too, because I think that this team should be remembered for more than that. They got Mississippi State back on track. They were a gritty team, I thought, for the most part. I thought that they were a fun team to be around. They had good attitudes. They were good teammates. They should be remembered for more than that, but unfortunately, I think that's going to be the sticking point, is there was so much more there, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I feel like you can easily, look at, a Florida or a UConn or Kansas State and think, that could have been us, right? Clearly it was possible to make it out of some of these regionals despite being on the road, but sometimes it just doesn't come together for you.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier, I think that, it kind of is what it is, I think, with this team. I think that's who they were. They just didn't do enough to win those kind of games. So I think at the end of the day, it all kind of evens out, and that's what the team is.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
Not really. I think that it's I think, we pretty much covered it all. This was an interesting team to cover. This offseason is going to be even more interesting. I'm really intrigued to see what happens.
Cool. I'm just going to go ahead and let you plug whatever you want to plug.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Robbie Falk on 3. If you're a State fan, come check us out at Maroon and White Daily. We're going to have coverage all summer on Mississippi State recruiting and the transfer portal and all that stuff. So come check us out. And you can listen to our podcasts. Myself and Brian Haydad, we have Thunder and Lightning podcast. You can check us out 5 times a week.
Sounds good. And then you can find me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can find all of our coverage at djournal.com. If you want more of our Ole Miss or Mississippi State coverage, feel free to check out our lineup of newsletters at djournal.com/newsletters. And if you want to join the conversation with other fans, feel free to check out our Mississippi State and Ole Miss sports discussion groups on Facebook. Robbie, thanks again for your time. I really do appreciate it. And thanks.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Anytime.